Lycan tugged up the hem of her green dress. Actually, Wanderer's shirt with the red spirals, to avoid the tangle of dewberry vines that crept across the path. Fragrant white blossoms scented the air. She had pinned her braid on top of her head with a wooden comb, but now straggles crept down to tickle her ears. In the pack on her back, she carried all of the sacred things that Wanderer had used to teach her. Father Son's trap, the cedar from First Woman's tree, a hollow tube to blow away bad spirits, and the clothes she had brought with her. Wanderer walked beside her in his gangly, springing stride, his head tilted so far to the left that it looked like it hurt. He had been thoughtful all morning while they followed the irregular edge of the bluff down into the bottomlands. As the heat of the day increased, sweat dripped from his long nose and splatted in the center of his red shirt. He had hung power pouches and shells on the ties of his breech clout to frighten away rambunctious souls, he'd said.
So the rainbow wasn't a regular rainbow?
No, it stretched across the entire sky, and the bands of light felt warm when I touched them.
So what did Wolf Slayer say about the war, Wanderer?
Oh, he just showed me Cahokia during the battle. It was terrible, Lycan. It frightened me.
Lycan swerved around a thistle patch. She turned and saw him stepping off in another direction.
Wanderer! No, not that way, this way.
Lycan trotted over to grip his hand and guide him back to the trail. He'd ambled off in the wrong direction 5 times since dawn. Once he had almost stepped off the edge of the bluff.
Just try to follow me, Wanderer, all right?
Oh, did I do it again? I'm sorry, Lycan.
You were thinking. It's all right.
I'm not very good company today, am I? I'm still trying to figure out that dream.
I know. Tell me more about Wolf Slayer. He was a glowing man, you said. I wonder if Foxfire will be.
I don't know. First Woman doesn't glow at all.
You've seen her?
Why, yes. A very long time ago, when I was first learning to dream.
Wanderer, why didn't you ever tell me? I need to know things like this, you know, for when I see her. What's she like?
Cantankerous. I never even saw her cave. She ran at me, swinging her walking stick to drive me away.
She did?
Yes. I don't think she liked me.
Oh. The wilted remnants of lamb's quarter, strawberries, and windflower drooped across the black soil. Morning glories huddled at the base of the rocks, cautiously twining their purple blossoms in the sheltered crevices. A few hearty sunflowers stretched their leaves to the sky, pleading for a drop of moisture. But not a cloud blemished the expanse of pale blue. Father Sun beat down on Mother Earth with club-like intensity, blinding the people who worked the fields that outlined the meandering traces of creeks. The soil had shattered where it lay exposed to the burning rays. Lycan led the way across a stretch of trail where the ground had shrunken and cracked like pieces of fat frying over a chokecherry fire.
I'm coming, First Woman. I'll be there to talk to you as soon as I can. But won't you let even one good rain fall before I get there?
Lycan winced at the thought of going into the underworld again. Memories of her litter overturning in the river had been haunting her. In her nightmares, she still gulped mouthfuls of chilling water and felt her lungs go cold before she jerked awake.
Wanderer, what happens if I get rock soul before I have to go back into the underworld?
What?
I said, what happens if I have to cross the river in the underworld with rock's soul in my body?
Wanderer squinted. In the sky behind him, a bald eagle circled lazily, flapping only when it needed to change altitude. Its flight inscribed a lilting song across the blue.
Rock soul?
Yes, you know, or something else that would sink. I'm worried that...
Oh, I get it. Well, I suppose you'll have to roll along the river bottom until you find a firm enough place to climb ashore. You'll want to avoid all the mucky places, of course, because if you get stuck, you won't have any hands or feet to push out with. Not having eyes will be the real problem, since you won't be able to see where you're going. But I suspect that if you feel your way, paying attention to the flow of the current, you'll make it. Well, I mean, unless one of the grouse with fish fins dives down to gobble you up for its gizzard.
His eyes were unnervingly intent. Lycan frowned sullenly and walked off into a hollowed niche where cool shadows fell over her.
Blessed Thunderbird. I hope no worm souls try to get me before I have to talk to Birdman again.
Wanderer trotted up behind her.
What really worries me about the dream, Lycan, was that the whole countryside had been set afire. If the crops and land burn, there will be no more us. Life is so precarious now that such a loss would be fatal.
Did Wolfslayer tell you how to stop it?
Yes, my daughter. He told me to teach you that to step onto the path, you must leave it. Only the lost come to stand alone before the entrance to the cave, and only the defenseless step over its threshold. Wolfslayer said to tell you that in union you will find the light, though it appears as darkness, nakedness, nothingness. He said that if you can't enter the cave, First Woman's wrath will sweep humans from the face of the land.
Wanderer, why me? Why does it have to be me? Why can't you do it? Or Nightshade? You've both been to the underworld lots more than I have.
Power makes its own choices. No one can fully understand its ways. I just wish I knew how much time I have left to teach you. I don't want to push you, but Lycan.
Lycan bit her lip, recalling how the light had roasted her soul the last time he had pushed her.
We'd better do it, Wanderer. It might take me longer to learn than we expect, so...
There he is! Wait, Lycan! I've been trying all morning!
Wanderer thrashed his way through a briar of withered nettles. He jumped first to the right, tried to grab something off the ground, then jumped to the left.
Oh, no, no, come here! I'm not going to hurt you!
Lycan resignedly sank to the ground in the thin shadow of a buffalo bean bush.
Ha!
Wanderer dodged out of the thistle, hunched over and snatched at something in the weeds. He tramped back to Lycan with a horn toad in his hand. The creature's throat puffed in and out angrily while Wanderer stroked its prickly head with a dirty thumb. He dropped in the shadow beside Lycan and sat cross-legged.
There, it's all right. We just need your help for a little while. Horned toads are very secretive, but they have remarkable eyesight.
Better than antelope?
Oh, yes, much better.
Is it going to tell you about something it saw?
I doubt it. They hate it when people do this to them.
Wanderer handed the toad to Lycan so he could tug a red thread from the sleeve of his shirt. Horned toad gave her an evil look and started to slime her hand. She shifted him to her other hand and wiped her fingers on the grass, but had to switch him back almost immediately.
Ah! Wanderer!
Hold on a little longer, Lycan.
She lifted Horned Toad and squinted threateningly at him. He glared back.
All right, Lycan. Let me have him.
Horned Toad shot out of her hand like a slippery fish and into Wanderer's. Lycan rubbed her fingers in the dirt to clean them.
Quiet, quiet. That's it. We're not going to hurt you. Wolfslayer said that Badgertail had left Cahokia yesterday and that Pataga would be waiting for him. We need to know where those warriors are now.
He stroked Toad's head until the creature calmed down and stopped sliming. Very gently, Wanderer set Horned Toad on the ground and tied one end of the red thread around Toad's throat, the other end to the tip of his own first finger. Then he picked up Toad and started walking. Lycan trotted behind.
Where are we going?
Up to that high point.
What for?
Wanderer trudged up a small rise that overlooked the bottomland. Redweed Village sat at the base of the rocky outcrop to the southwest. Lycan joined him among the sunflowers. Wanderer held Horned Toad high over his head and closed his eyes.
All right. Let's see what's happening out there.
As Wanderer turned in a slow circle, sunlight transformed his gray hair into a snowy halo. Lycan gazed up at Horned Toad. His throat puffed as he scanned the rolling hills. Whenever Horned Toad blinked, Wanderer stopped suddenly, as though he could no longer see, then rotated another hand's worth. After he had finished three full circles, Wanderer's brows drew down over his long nose. He lowered Horned Toad, untied the thread, and let him go. Toad scampered back into the grass, blades bending this way and that as he ran.
Could you see anything?
Pataga. He's still in the south, but it looks like he's moving north. From the smoke patterns, I would say that he's attacked several villages along the way. But I couldn't see anything to the north or west. I don't understand.
What don't you understand?
If Badgertail left Cahokia yesterday, I should have seen something. Warriors or scavenger birds following the warriors. Where could Badgertail be? He must be traveling with nearly 1,000. Do you think Wolf Slayer was wrong?
Lycan shielded her eyes to examine the west. The bluffs along the Father Water were nothing more than an ethereal smudge of gray. But the longer Lycan gazed at them, the more uneasy she felt.
Wanderer, something's wrong out there. Can you feel it?
Yes, I've been feeling it all morning.
Lycan trotted down the hill to the trail, Wanderer close on her heels.
Let's hurry. When can you teach me more, Wanderer? Tonight?
If your mother will let me, yes. In fact, doing this lesson in your own house might be best. You'll feel safer there than anywhere else.
What will you teach me, Wanderer?
I was thinking that maybe you're ready to learn about surrender. About stepping into the mouth of the spirit that wants to chew you up.
Locust's boots sank into the moist sand as she walked along Pumpkin Creek behind Badgertail. They had marched half of last night and all of today, gnawing dried fish from their packs and making do with what plants presented themselves along the way. But their speed could not keep Locust from worrying about her sister-in-law. The birthing women had said that Green Ash's time was close, and Locust desperately wanted to be there when the child pushed from the world of darkness into this world of light. Primrose might need her if something went wrong. She glanced at Badgertail's broad back.
But he needs me too. Especially now.
50 warriors followed in single file behind Locust, quiet, cautious. To either side, the creek's banks rose steeply, shielding them from all but the highest points on the bluffs to the east. But nothing was certain. Curls of smoke sprouted for as far as the eye could see.
What is Pataga doing? Burning every village in the highlands?
Badgertail lifted a hand to point.
We'll be there by moonrise. The village sits at the base of that crescent-shaped outcrop.
Will we attack tonight, Badgertail? Or wait for sunrise? The warriors are tired. It's been a long, hot march.
It depends on what we see when we arrive. I won't know until then. Remind the warriors again that we're looking for two things. A tall, old man with gray hair named Wanderer, and...
You're going to save Wanderer, as Nightshade asked?
Yes. She wouldn't have asked unless that old man played some important role in the future.
But what if the role he plays is against us, Badgertail? How can we know for...
We can't, cousin. But we can always kill him later if it turns out that he's supposed to help Pataga. Anyway, tell the warriors not to hurt Wanderer and to find that stone wolf. Since we don't know what the wolf is, tell them to protect anything that might be it.
I will. Badgertail?
Locust came up beside him so she could look him in the eyes.
Badgertail, what should I... If Redweed Village did join Pataga, the only people who'll be left there are the very old, the sick, and a few women and children.
I already told you, Locust. The Sun Chief wants the village wiped clean. As a sign to others who might have treasonous notions. Make it clear.
I know you picked these warriors carefully, Badgertail, but most of them have human hearts. They won't like it. You know how they feel about...
I don't like it either.
Locust's stomach tried to tie itself in knots. He had not been thinking well during the past several hours. He'd been making mistakes, misjudging the difficulty of the terrain, had even gotten lost once. A thing unheard of for the great Badgertail on a battle walk. Now he laid a hand on Locust's shoulder, and for the first time in years, gently caressed her skin.
Sorry if I sounded harsh. I'm worried about Pataga. Tell the warriors to... Just tell them to do their duty.
I'll tell them.
but she stood watching Badgertail plod forward, walking as though he wanted to be out of earshot when Locust relayed the order to the men. Badgertail came to a curve in the bank, where a thick slab of rock protruded over the creek. Locust watched him lean against the stone, bracing himself with a hand.
Seeing the faces of the dead, Badgertail?
All night and through today, when she least expected it, voices from past battles would eddy up through her soul. A woman begging her not to kill her husband, the sudden silencing of a child's laughter, a dying warrior cursing her with his last breath. Images flared and died, and Locust recoiled from the charred skeletons of houses wrapped in pale, smoky haze, the corpses staring up in hatred.
Badgertail, what are we doing? Why aren't we trying to talk to Pataga? Why? Don't even think it.
At dawn, Badgertail had split their forces, dispatching several scouts, then separating the remainder into war parties of about 75 each, and sending them as emissaries to the major villages in the north. He had ordered them to stay under cover, to creep along the drainages. But Locust knew that it would not be enough. Even if they managed to escape Pataga's lookouts, day after tomorrow, the foundations of everything Locust and Badgertail held precious would be rent asunder. Badgertail's strategy seemed solid. If the northern villages joined them, they would incorporate new warriors into their ranks, and the war parties would link up south of Bladdernut Village and form an unbreakable chain a half-day's walk in length, then sweep southward to confront Pataga. Locust's eyes narrowed. Badgertail's hand slipped from the rock and fell limply to his side. It looked as if he had to force his reluctant feet to walk forward. Meadowvole knelt on a mat outside her house, rubbing a handful of milkweed against her bare thigh, separating out the inner fibrous material for thread. Children played in the plaza, while their parents labored over fires where evening stews of turkey, spring beauty corms, and tubers of pepper root bubbled in pots over the flames. A feathery draft eased up the creek bottom, tugging at Vol's hair. She smiled. Across the endless blue above, clouds swirled into massive thunderheads that gleamed violet in the last rays of sunset. Her eyes kept straying to the trail.
They're coming. One thing you can say about Wanderer, he keeps his promises. He's bringing Lycan home right now. Providing he's not lost.
She tossed the milkweed fibers into the basket at her side. All day she had been fighting her desire to run up the trail and meet them halfway. She had missed Lycan more than she'd ever thought possible. In the 10 days since her daughter had been gone, Vol had felt empty and purposeless, as though without Lycan. Now she rose, stretched her tired back muscles, and walked out into the plaza. Flycatcher and Screech Owl were involved in a wrestling match near the central fire pit. Screech Owl's bulk kept Flycatcher pinned to the ground, although his arms flailed wildly. A huddle of old people clustered around the fire, watching the match in delight while they placed bets.
Screech Owl, get off me! This isn't fun anymore!
Not fun for you, but lots of fun for me!
Screech Owl gripped one of Flycatcher's arms and wrenched it hard. Desperate, Flycatcher squirmed to throw Screech Owl off balance and then slammed his knee into Flycatcher's groin. The bigger boy crumpled and fell back. Vol took in the quiet beauty of the evening. The 15 houses that formed a rectangle around the plaza stood like shaggy beasts, their door hangings tucked up to admit the breeze. Along the glistening ribbon of the creek, women crouched to wash clothes. They pounded the garments with rocks before dipping them back into the water to rinse away the dislodged soil and yucca soap. The day had been so hot that the old people who had been out carrying water to the corn and squash fields sat with sweat runneling the dust on their naked chests. No young male voices stirred the air. All of the able-bodied men and 4 of the young women had gone to fight with Pataga. Only 62 people remained in Redweed Village. Vol strolled over to Flycatcher's mother, Starbulb. The flat-nosed, pudgy woman had coiled her long braids on top of her head to keep them out of the way while she pierced her youngest daughter's ears. Little Teal crouched tensely, her hands twisting in her lap.
Do you need help?
No, this'll take just a moment. Teal's 2 summers old now, old enough to have her own ear spools. I traded for some small greenstone spools last month. Just the right size to start with.
Starbulb carefully surveyed her awl, made from the wingbone of a golden eagle, then slipped a small piece of wood behind Teal's ear to use as a stop. With a quick thrust, she punctured the lobe. Teal jerked, but didn't cry out. Her dark eyes stared unblinking, while Starbulb pierced the other lobe and laced short lengths of porcupine quill through the holes to keep them open.
All right, go play.
The little girl raced away to join the children playing ring and pin near the central fire.
So, Lycan should be coming home today?
Vol's eyes traced the winding curves of the trail that led up over the half-moon-shaped outcrop that encircled the village.
Yes, I'm sure they're coming. They're probably almost here.
You don't sound certain about that. I wouldn't be either if my child had gone to learn dreaming from old Wanderer. He's as crazy as they come. I don't know why you let Lycan go.
2 reasons. Lycan loves Wanderer, and he's the best dreamer in the land. He taught me. He taught Nightshade. And his powers have grown in the past 10 cycles. There's no one better for Lycan to learn from.
Well, if he's such a good dreamer, why didn't he know about Pataga attacking all the surrounding villages?
Dreamers don't know everything, Starbulb. Sometimes power prevents them seeing certain things, for its own reasons.
Probably because power knows Wanderer isn't human. I don't like looking into those raven eyes either. I always thought that old man was strange, even when he was teaching you. I never trusted him.
I did. And he never let me down.
Why did you stop studying with him? I assumed he'd done something terrible to you.
No. His powers were so great that they frightened me. I wasn't ready to learn the lessons he wanted to teach. I wasn't old enough to understand his love for me either. Gentle, unbinding. And my love for him was so childish. Half worship, half infatuation for an older man who could and did ride the waves of the underworld. And I'd felt so much guilt over shouts at night. Now I wish I had forced myself to learn those lessons. Lycan's been having strong dreams for years. If I'd learned more from Wanderer, I could be teaching her.
You still could.
Starbulb lifted her head to sniff the turkey stew. Steam whirled in silver wreaths over the pots.
Me? Teach Lycan? No. My daughter is already a better dreamer than I am, Bulb. She should be teaching me.
She's barely 10 summers.
Yes, 10. Power cares little for a person's age. It's the quality of the soul that matters. She'll be a great dreamer. If she can stand the pain.
Dusk was deepening into night. Vol slapped at the mosquito that probed her wrist.
Come on. It's time to go sit next to the fire, where the smoke will keep the bugs away.
When she stood, she saw 2 black dots descending the trail on the top of the outcrop. Against the slate-blue horizon, they moved steadily.
Lycan! It's Lycan! She's come home!
Flycatcher flew up the trail, leaving a gasping screech owl far behind as he dodged brush and leaped rocks to welcome Lycan. Vol knotted a hand in her tan skirt and started up the trail herself, forcing her feet to plod slowly, lest Lycan see her desperate happiness. Lycan let go of Wanderer's hand when she saw Flycatcher racing up the hill, her mother following behind. She flashed down the trail to meet them, her green hem fluttering about her legs. The vista of the village rose before her. People stood up in the plaza to look. Wind bathed her face in the pungent scents of home and night. She could smell the cooking stews, and her empty stomach growled in delight.
Lycan! Lycan!
Flycatcher!
Oh, I'm glad you're home, Lycan.
He threw his arms around her and hugged her tightly. They tussled for a while, trying to throw each other off balance. Even though she stood a hand taller than he and usually won this contest, Lycan's pack made her so awkward that she staggered sideways and lost. Flycatcher's blue headband had slipped up on his forehead, pushing his hair higher on one side. Grass and twigs protruded from the tangles.
What happened to you up there? What kind of things did you learn? Are you still human?
Oh, Lycan. Come, let me look at you. Oh.
Lycan dove to wrap her arms around her mother's neck. It felt so good to be close again. Her mother kissed Lycan's hair and face, and Lycan's soul ached with happiness.
Oh, Mother, I missed you.
I missed you, too.
Lycan patted her mother gently before she pushed back to stare into those dark eyes.
Mother, guess what? I went into the underworld. Wanderer made a death litter for me, and Birdman brought spirit wolves to pull it, and on the way back, I fell into the river.
You...
Her mother blinked thoughtfully, then lifted her gaze to Wanderer, who had come to stand behind Lycan like a tall, willowy tree. Lycan saw Wanderer nod. Her mother stroked Lycan's hair in amazement.
I'm so proud of you, Lycan. I've known only one dreamer in my life who could visit the underworld.
Yes, well, Wolfslayer told me that not many dreamers can, but I got my dreaming power from Wanderer.
Her mother's smile faded then, hardened into anger as she looked at Wanderer. A dreadful silence fell. Flycatcher stood as rigid as a startled goose, his eyes going back and forth from one to the other.
I kept my promise, Vol. I didn't tell her. Wolfslayer did.
Her mother lowered her eyes disbelievingly before she straightened.
We'll discuss it later, Wanderer. I'm sure Lycan is hungry. I have a fresh pot of rabbit stew waiting for her.
Wanderer patted Lycan's head as he passed her to stride down the hill at Vol's side. She could see that her mother's shoulder muscles had bunched. They marched straight through the plaza without saying a word to anyone.
I guess I shouldn't have said that.
What did you say? I didn't understand why your mother got mad.
Oh, when I was in the underworld, Wolfslayer talked to me about my family, that's all. He told me some things I didn't know before.
Like what?
Like he told me my mother could have been a great dreamer. Wolfslayer said that he had picked my mother to save our people. But in the end, Mother couldn't do it. She was too afraid of power. So Wolfslayer said that he and the wolf bundle had to make sure I got born.
Why?
So I can find First Woman's cave and talk to her.
I've never heard of those things. What's the wolf bundle?
I don't know. I guess I'll find out.
What else did Wolfslayer say?
I don't think I'd better tell you yet, Flycatcher. Even if you are my best friend.
Why not? I wouldn't tell.
I know, but I think people in the village might be mad at my mother if they found out.
Flycatcher kept giving her sideways glances as they descended. She felt guilty not telling him about Wanderer being her real father, both because the fact made her proud and because she usually told Flycatcher all of her secrets. But she didn't think it would be a good idea just now. She avoided the questions in his eyes by gazing out across the land. At the biggest bend in the creek, a pelican was stepping slowly through the water, its beak clamped on a fish. Beyond, swallows darted like black daggers over the spreading expanse of floodplain.
I'm sorry, Flycatcher.
Well, I should probably go and eat dinner or something.
Lycan gave him a quick hug.
And I should go see what my mother and Wanderer are saying. We'll play ring and pin tomorrow, all right?
Yes!
Flycatcher trotted up to the central fire and squatted next to his mother and Teal. The old people watched Lycan as she headed for her house. Firelight flowed into the brown seams of their weathered faces, highlighting their curiosity. Lycan felt ill. She had been so afraid of telling her mother about having Water Snake's soul that she had forgotten that she wasn't supposed to know about Wanderer being her father. By the time she reached home, the barest sliver of Moon Maiden's face had crested the eastern horizon. Dusk had settled over the land like a dark blue cape. For a while, as the blue deepened to a smoky indigo, he forced himself to forget about the terrible days to come and drifted on the beauty around him. Scents of toad flax and kicked dust twined up with the darkness. He angled down to a lower ledge that jutted out from the slope. Massive chunks of limestone had broken from the cliff and tumbled into a jagged pile in the meadow below. The dying light shimmered off the torn faces of the rocks. As Hail Cloud watched, a flock of bats erupted from one of the darkest crevices and flooded the sky in a serpentine sheet of black. Hail Cloud worked across the narrow lip of rock.
Basswood, it's me.
The 12 men who slumped wearily along the back of the shelter turned to examine him. Their dirt-streaked faces wore the strain of deep fatigue. None of them had slept in 2 days. Sweat gleamed on their heavily tattooed bodies, staining their breechclouts. Basswood, a medium-sized man built like a block of granite, shoved himself to his feet and crossed the shelter to embrace Hail Cloud so hard it drove the air from his lungs.
We were growing worried. What took you so long?
Basswood backed away to look Hail Cloud up and down, making certain he was all right. Basswood's body bulged with muscles. His eyes were red-rimmed and submerged in a face as dark and wrinkled as aged leather. He might have been 30, but he still possessed a fire for battle, as well as the sense to know when to fight and when to run for cover. He had fought at Hail Cloud's side for 15 cycles.
Bluebird Village took longer than expected. After the young went to join Pataga, the few old people who remained had to scramble to help us find wood. Some even tore down their own houses to contribute to the bonfire.
Good. Surely Badgertail will think the bulk of our forces is still hanging around Red Star Mounds.
Basswood led Hail Cloud across the dusty floor to a soft bed of grass piled against the rear wall. They both dropped tiredly atop it and leaned back against the stone, cool and comforting against Hail Cloud's bare shoulders. Young Boltine swiveled around to gaze at them. 17 summers old, he had bushy, drooping eyebrows that contrasted with his girlishly long lashes.
With the bluebird fire, that makes 14 in all. Will it be enough? Will Badgertail be fooled?
Into thinking we're still in the south?
In the south, and burning our way north.
Hail Cloud balled his fists. For 2 days, he had been asking himself the same agonizing questions.
How many fires are enough? Will too many look suspicious? How are the small harassment parties doing? Have our lookout parties managed to capture and kill each of Badgertail's runners to keep him from gaining any information? If Badgertail falls for our ruse, where and how will he position his warriors?
I don't know. We're counting on him going north. I pray he does that. If he goes south instead...
Boltine ran a hand over his dirty ridge of hair. Dislodged dust swam in the fading light.
When do we join forces with Gord's warriors?
Tomorrow, if everything goes as planned. We need to hear what's happening in the north.
I'm sure Pataga has everything organized.
Yes. Of course he does.
But doubt gnawed at his ribs. When Pataga had ordered him to lead the diversionary war parties, Hail Cloud had objected, arguing that Pataga needed him close at hand in case something went wrong with their plans. But Pataga had maintained that he could handle the initial attacks if Hail Cloud would just create enough confusion to keep Badgertail wondering what they were up to. Basswood leaned forward to unlace his water sack from his pack, which lay against the back wall. He opened it and took a drink, then handed the sack to Hail Cloud.
Everything is a gamble. Let's all pray that Father Sun agrees with our cause. Did anyone catch sight of movement in the Bottomlands today?
Heads shook all around, and worry sank knives into Hail Cloud's gut.
Where could Badgertail be? What trap is he laying?
Lycan sat on her bed, her chin propped atop her knees. The yellow spiders on the walls whispered to the stone wolf, barely audible, brooding. She couldn't understand their words. Strange that she had never heard them talking before, though she had slept in this room thousands of times. But power was loose on the night. She could feel it nipping at her flesh with tiny fangs. She fiddled with the red spirals on the hem of Wanderer's green ritual shirt, creasing them between her fingertips while she studied Wanderer and her mother. They sat cross-legged near the dead fire in the middle of the house. They'd lit no fire bowls and had lowered the door hanging for privacy. Opaline shadows, soft and translucent, fell over them. If Lycan had to listen to their silence much longer, she wouldn't be able to breathe.
What did they say to each other before I came in? Something bad, probably.
Her mother's face looked stormy. Wanderer smiled sadly while he drew magical signs in the hard-packed dirt of the floor.
Is that what the stone wolf and the spiders are discussing?
Lycan turned away to gaze out the window. As she watched, Moon Maiden's face slipped above the craggy skyline near where she and Wanderer had talked to the rocks. The tumbled boulders stood like dark sentinels against the silver undercoat of moonlight.
Can Birdman come and help me? The rocks say that he has never left me, but I saw him fly away through my window. This window.
Lycan tilted her head inquisitively. Maybe Birdman did live inside her. Like the shadow of her soul, always there, but not really. She'd known in the underworld that he was coming, even before she'd seen him flying through the sky. As if their souls touched somehow.
Vol, you don't have to believe my dream, but...
I don't believe it. I think you've taught Lycan enough. Maybe I won't let her go back to see you ever again.
Wanderer's fingers continued to draw magical designs in the dirt, but the deep wrinkles around his eyes tightened.
Dreamers are not made in 10 days, Vol. Thunderstorms do not come from wisps of cloud. Lightning is more than a tongue of fire. If Lycan has to learn on her own, the pain will probably drive her away from dreaming. Power has chosen her. This is not something you or I have a say in. She will be a dreamer. The only choice we have is whether we help her or leave her to stumble around trying to find her own way.
Some people do better stumbling around than being guided by a crazy old... Oh.
Her mother suddenly stood up, and Lycan jerked involuntarily. Tears stung her eyes. She pulled her lips in between her teeth and clamped them tightly to keep them from trembling. She just wanted to live with Wanderer for a little while longer. She didn't want to hurt her mother. Crossing the room, her mother tugged the stone wolf from its niche, then strode back past Wanderer to kneel before her daughter. Lycan fought to suppress her tears while she gazed into her mother's stern face. Vol's eyes looked blacker than black, and the nostrils of her hooked nose had started to flare. Her mother held up the wolf.
See this, Lycan? I braided a thong to put the wolf on, just so you could wear it when you got home.
She draped the thong over Lycan's head. Lycan shuddered when the wolf fell over her heart. Threads of power seeped out of the object, penetrating her chest.
The wolf will help Lycan, Wanderer. You don't need...
Your mother doesn't realize that her little girl died crossing the dark river in the underworld. That Lycan's soul is living down with the waving weeds that grow on the bottom of the river. I too crossed a river once, and lost my soul.
Did Water Snake come to save you too?
No. A dreamer did. Though he didn't know he was a dreamer at the time. He saved me in just the way Wanderer is trying to save you. By taking care of your new soul so it doesn't hurt itself before it can grow strong.
But what if my mother won't let me go live with Wanderer?
Know this, Lycan. Power works towards its own ends. Even if it has to destroy entire ways of life to keep the spiral in balance. No single life is sacred to power. All life is sacred. Humans are no more important than Eagle. Eagle is no more important than a tiny rice grass seed tumbling over the prairies in autumn. All things have their place on the spiral. The path that lies before you will be very hard. Are you brave enough?
What do I have to do? I know I have to go talk to First Woman in her cave, but...
Before that, you must go to a cave in this world. It will be dark, cold, but fire burns there. as it did on a mountain long ago when another dreamer had to lose his soul, his family, that he might save the spiral. Or perhaps you might find blood there.
Why me, Spirit? Why not somebody better? Wanderer...
I once asked that question. Perhaps every dreamer does. Power takes great risks to find the best, the strongest. You are that dreamer.
But I'm scared, Spirit. What if I can't do it? What if I'm never good enough to get the First Woman's cave?
Wanderer glanced at Vol, who had eased down to the floor on shaky legs, her eyes glazed, mouth ajar, as she watched her daughter. Lycan was dreaming, though wide awake. Moonlight spilled through the window, cradling her heart-shaped face and flowing into the folds of green fabric she wore.
But what will happen to my mother? What will happen to Wanderer? I can't leave them. I don't want to be alone, Spirit. I'm scared.
Lycan fell forward, burying her face in the kinky fur of her buffalo robe. Wanderer and Vol lurched forward simultaneously, each reaching for the girl.
What is it, Lycan? Who are you talking to?
Oh, Mother! Oh, Mother!
The Stone Wolf told you that you had to leave both of us, your mother and me?
Yes!
But why? What's...
Through the window, he saw the first barrage of flaming arrows pierce the darkness. They sailed in glowing arcs into Redweed Village. Wanderer whirled and dove for the door, where he jerked the hanging aside to peer out. Moonglow cast the long shadows of warriors over the houses. As Wanderer watched, a warrior shot an arrow into the temple. The cattail roof caught, sending wands of light to illuminate the outcrop. Houses burst into flame all around him. People scrambled out the doors to run. The warriors fell on the old men, women, and children alike, bashing with their clubs, shooting arrows into frail old chests. Bodies tumbled to the bloody grass. One old man, his head bashed in, crawled spider-like, trying to get away. Contorted faces flickered orange in the blazing glare. An arrow arced down into the roof of Vol's house. Garlands of red sparks shot upward, spattering the black belly of the sky. Wanderer dodged back into the house, already smoke twirled down in a gray haze.
Vol, grab Lycan! We have to try to get out through the window!
But they'll be watching. You know they will. They're probably waiting to...
Get out! It's our only chance!
Lycan pointed at the ceiling. Wanderer lunged for his daughter and knocked her back against the wall as a burning section of roof toppled into the room. Flames engulfed Vol's bed and licked up the wall, peeling off the clay to get to the hardwood poles beneath. Smoke boiled out in choking black layers. When Wanderer turned, he caught sight of Vol's arm, twisted at an impossible angle in the midst of the flames. Vol was under the blazing thatch.
Vol!
Mother! Where's my mother? Wanderer, help my mother!
Roughly, he grabbed his daughter's hand and dragged her to the window. Lifting her up, he shoved her outside, then turned back. Wanderer hit the floor on his stomach, sliding beneath the smoke toward the last place he had seen Vol. His scorching lungs screamed for him to get out, but he swept the floor with his hands until he bumped soft flesh. Grabbing Vol's forearm, he jerked with all of his strength to pull her from beneath the sizzling thatch. Her dress burst into flame as soon as the air struck it. Wanderer rolled her in the dirt, then scrambled to get her up in his arms so he could run to the window. Together, they toppled out into the darkness. Wanderer carried Vol through the brush, away from the burning village, where he could lay her down on a soft bed of grass. The vile odor of singed hair clung to her. Blisters bubbled over her right leg. Lycan trotted in from the shadows, crying, her face covered with soot.
What happened?
She got caught under the roof. It must have smashed her against the wall when it fell. I think she hit her head.
Is she all right?
Yes, I think so, but...
A dozen people flooded around the husk of Vol's house, stumbling and shoving their way toward the black ribbon of the creek. Wanderer recognized Wart and his mother in the forefront. 5 enemy warriors leaped up from the drainage channel where they had been hiding. The church studs in their war clubs glittered as they raised their weapons over their heads and charged forward into the fleeing people. The group broke and scattered. A warrior grabbed the racing Wart by the back of his shirt, slammed his club into the side of Wart's head, then tossed the boy's limp body to the ground. The warrior vaulted Wart's corpse and fell on another child.
Lycan, run! I said run!
She stood rigid, staring, unblinking at Wart, 50 hands away. The boy stared back, his sightless eyes wide and dead. Wanderer pushed her with all of the strength he could muster. Lycan stumbled and fell to the ground.
Run! We'll find you if we can!
But I can't!
I said go!
Lycan dutifully rose to her feet and dashed out into the dark clusters of brush and rock. The anguish on her face had torn Wanderer's soul to dandelion fluff. He watched her disappear, his heart in his throat, before turning back to Vol. Slipping his arms under her knees and shoulders, he staggered to his feet, preparing to follow Lycan.
Wanderer!
The familiar voice caused him to hesitate for an instant, long enough for 3 warriors to loom out of the firelit darkness and encircle him, their bows up, arrow points aimed at his back and stomach. Wanderer's tongue clove to the roof of his parched mouth like a choking root. A tall, burly warrior swaggered from the shadows. Blood coated his heavily tattooed chest in lurid splotches. The fire flared suddenly as the last of Vol's roof and walls crashed in upon themselves. Wanderer instinctively ducked and clutched Vol's limp body closer to his chest. The light wrapped the warrior in a patina of pure gold. The squat face had grown more wrinkles in the past 10 cycles, but the bulging eyes had lost none of their keenness.
Badger Tail.
Lycan thrashed through the underbrush, ignoring the stinging nettles that raked her legs and arms. Firelight reflected across the rock outcrop, swirling like monstrous creatures with fiery wings.
Lycan! Lycan, come this way! This way!
Who are you? What do you want?
Lycan stumbled over a black mustard bush, but she regained her balance and ran again. Prismatic reflections sparkled through her blurry eyes as she dodged into a thick bramble of berry vines and fell to her knees. Through the dense tangle, she watched in horror as the warriors shoved Wanderer toward the creek, stabbing his back with the blunt ends of their war clubs. Her mother's body, legs dangling, hung limply in Wanderer's arms as the group disappeared down the black throat of the creek bottom. A fist tightened around Lycan's heart.
Mother! Mother, don't leave me!
Lycan peered through the cold, smoky air, trying to spot anyone she knew. Warriors trotted around the skeletons of houses, kicking the bodies to make sure they were dead.
Flycatcher, where are you? Birdman, let him be all right! Oh, Wart!
Lycan crawled to the far end of the bramble so she could view the village from a different angle. Corpses lay hideously sprawled across the scorched grass in the plaza. Ashes fluttered down from the sky like horrible snowflakes, covering the dead with sheets of white. Lycan sniffed the pungent odors that oozed from the breeze. Her soul writhed with the coppery scent of blood.
Stonewolf, what's happening to me?
8 warriors trotted from the village and began striking the brush with their war clubs. They flushed a rabbit that darted away into the firelit crevices of the rocks. The warriors let it go. But when Old Man Woodduck rose from behind a clump of rose bushes and tried to run on his maimed leg, one of the warriors pounced on him.
They're searching for anyone still alive, little one. You have to run. Run, Lycan. Hurry!
But if I stand up, they'll see me. What?
Suddenly, she knew. She flopped on her stomach and slithered through the brush, as silent as water snake, her movements hidden by the wavering dance of shadows. Pataga sat beside Gopher in the chief's open-sided shelter north of Red Star Mounds and peered intently out at the darkness. Half of his warriors had come up through Slippery Elm and Goatsrue villages, while another third had been with Hailcloud at Axe Seed and Bluebird, before they'd broken off to come join him. The remainder, perhaps 300 warriors, had coalesced along the river south of One Mound Village, waiting for Badger Tail. No fires burned on this night. Everyone knew that at least three of Badger Tail's war parties lurked a day's walk to the north, just over that hump that thrust up on top of the bluff. Another 2 days, then Pataga would attack. They couldn't risk being spotted, not now, not when they stood on the brink of battle. In silver-edged darkness, warriors groped awkwardly for their packs and blankets. Everywhere Pataga looked, black forms swayed as they completed final nightly duties. They moved in grave silence, as silent as the dead.
Father? From your pole high in Cahokia, do you watch us through your empty eye sockets? Coming. Yes, coming for you, Father. Coming to take your head home and bury it with your body so you can walk in the underworld with pride and honor.
Old Gopher leaned sideways to look out from beneath the hastily constructed grass roof at Moon Maiden. She hung in the middle of the sky, surrounded by concentric halos of green, orange, and yellow. Far out on the western horizon, lightning bounced around inside the belly of a bank of dark clouds. Pataga strained his ears to see if he could pick up the roar of Thunderbird, but he heard only the pounding of his pulse.
Gopher?
The old man cocked his head expectantly. At the age of 42 summers, his long black hair and bushy brows had grown streaks of gray. He had a broad nose that spread out onto his cheeks like a flattened ground cherry. He had worn an ancient deerhide war shirt painted with the faded blue image of Falcon. It had brought him luck, he'd boasted, in his early days when he had been one of Red Star Mound's greatest warriors. But it looked tattered and shabby to Pataga's eyes.
What is it, young Pataga?
I've been concerned about something.
What?
If you don't discuss it with someone soon, you'll burst from the anxiety. Gopher was your mother's favorite cousin, and he gave 300 warriors to this venture. That should be proof enough that he believes in your cause. Still.
Pataga grooved the dirt with the toe of his sandal. In the dusty moon glow, the groove resembled the dark, slithering track of a snake.
I was wondering what you think will happen if we destroy Theron.
I think we'll be a lot happier.
Yes, but I mean, well, do you think that the remaining villages will work together? After all, Cahokia has been the center of our chiefdom for hundreds of cycles. Trade was handled for the benefit of every village. Cahokia has organized and funded the traders, then redistributed the exotic things we've gleaned so that each village could trade them for what they wanted. And the villages have always paid tribute to keep trade going. What will happen when there's no longer a need to pay tribute?
Ah, you mean to ask, do I think the trade will fall apart?
Yes, that's what I mean. Do you?
Gopher turned so he could study the stars. They twinkled with an uncommon brilliance tonight. His long hair draped over the green diamonds woven into his tan blanket.
Probably.
But if that happens, what will we do?
Fight each other, I suspect. Which is nothing new. We've been fighting each other for tens of cycles. That's the way it was before Charon's dream. That's how it began, with Wolfslayer and Birdman, both brothers, fighting. We've always fought. Never with as many warriors as now, but haven't you noticed? Cahokia's palisades aren't exactly new, and other villages have even older earthen embankments or flimsy stockades out of fear of their relatives.
So you think we'll be at each other's throats? Worse than now?
No. There won't be as many of us when this is over. Those who aren't killed outright will be stupid not to run for their lives. I suspect that 2/3 of us will be gone when this war is done. You've seen the endless lines of people fleeing with their possessions strapped to their backs? You didn't imagine that they'd come back, did you?
But why wouldn't they? We're building a better life for them.
We're building a better life for us, cousin. Anyone who can afford to keep trading when this is through will be wealthy beyond his imagining. Prices will soar because unusual goods will be scarce. The Sunborn, with their treasure troves of lace, galena, copper, and seashells, will make out like thieves.
Pataga's stomach knotted. Aimlessly, he formed tiny peaks in the golden fabric over his knee, then smoothed them away again. Anger mixed with disgust within him to form a bitter brew.
Is that why you agreed to give 300 warriors to this fight?
Of course. Do you believe that your reasons, revenge and hatred, are more noble?
Don't you understand that we're fighting for our way of life? That we're hoping to make things easier for everyone, especially for the common born, who suffer the most in times of hunger and deprivation.
Gopher casually turned sideways on his blanket, apparently sensing the emotional waves Pataga was riding.
You're such a boy, Moon Chief. You must learn to see the world through the eyes of a man. We are...
Pataga rose with as much dignity as he could find and bowed at the waist.
Excuse me, cousin. I promised to talk to Hailcloud's son, Spoonbill, before I retire tonight.
Spoonbill? He's your age, isn't he? Yeah, good idea. He'll understand you. All children your age have grand notions of right and wrong.
At least we make the distinction, cousin.
When you're rich and fat, then we'll talk about it. We'll see if you draw the line in the same place.
Pataga strode out into the darkness, his heart bursting. He had tried so hard to be like his father, honorable, open to new thoughts, sensitive to the needs of anyone in trouble, calculating in war. But as he sped through a dense briar of buffalo current, those traits seemed suddenly unimportant. Like flesh, shocked by an arrow point's keen edge, his grief he had been suppressing for days, awakened to choke him. Tears burned his eyes.
Father, what would you have done? Would you have sat back like Alota did and hoped for the best? Wouldn't you have fought? Father! Oh!
A finger of wind ruffled his hair, gently, affectionately, and Pataga broke into a run. His first three paces went unhindered, but then his golden robe caught on a current branch and ripped. Furiously, he jerked at his hem to tug it loose. On the hump, he saw one of the lookouts crouch in alarm. Pataga slowly sank into the shelter of the currant bushes and buried his face in his hands. Black Birch squatted before the fire in the thatched house of the young chief of Bladdernut Village. Pale moonlight spilled through the window and outlined the simple furnishings at the far end of the house with a soft, dove-colored glow. The ivory blanket draping Renwing's sleeping bench faded to a mottled gray, and the five baskets lining the wall above the bench were nothing more than dark shadows. A small shell contained a finger's full of very weak white drink. It was all that Renwing had to offer.
We've gone over this 5 times, Renwing. How many more times do I have to explain?
Until we understand each other. Or would you have me deny you warriors just because I don't grasp your need? That's what will happen if you keep pushing me.
To Renwing's right, a beautiful shield made of tanned buffalo hide stood on a tripod. Beaded fringes draped down the sides and swayed delicately in the draft through the window. The drooping white blossoms of a bladdernut plant were painted on the center of the shield, the sole item of any value in the chief's lodge. But then, Bladdernut was one of the poorest villages in the chiefdom. From the moment his war party had marched into the village, Black Birch's skin had been crawling. Not one person had seemed surprised to see them when they trotted up from the drainages. Lookouts had probably spotted them and prepared the village for possible attack. The main path that led through Bladdernut had lain empty to the streaming moonlight, and ominously silent. No childish giggles or women's voices had wafted from the houses, though he had occasionally caught sight of frightened female eyes peering through slits in door hangings. Black Birch had felt as though he were running through a ghost village as he approached the chief's house, on the hilltop at the northern end of the maze of houses. Then Renwing had agreed to meet with Black Birch only if he came in alone and unarmed. Black Birch felt naked without his weapons. Uneasily, he glanced around. 5 guards stood at strategic points throughout the house, their arms crossed, each holding a war club and with a knife sheathed on the sash that belted his tan shirt above his breech clout.
I'm not trying to push, Renwing. It's just that time is so short. We have to move south to join Badgertail day after tomorrow.
Perhaps you should just move on now, Black Birch, and save us both this trouble. This is your fight, not ours.
Let me try again. You've seen the fires in the south. You're far more vulnerable than Bluebird or Paintbrush were. Look around you. Bladdernut has no palisades. You've barely enough warriors to man the high points of the rocks. A strong gale would blow down your defenses. If Pataga comes here with 900 warriors, you'll be wiped out to the last child.
Firelight danced over the soot-stained walls behind Renwing, silhouetting his 20 summers old face and his long braids, fierce eyes, and pug nose. The man had become chief after his father's death last winter, and he'd had little experience in governing.
He's never even been on a battle walk. How can he understand the importance of this war?
I've no doubt of the truth of that, Black Birch. But what reason would Pataga have for coming here? We've nothing he wants.
Oh, yes, you do. You have 40 warriors he might be able to recruit to fight against the Sun Chief.
So? 40 is a pittance. Would he kill 100 women and children to—
He killed nearly 400 at Spiral Mounds, and at least 50 at Bluebird, and 75 at Paintbrush.
Guards shifted and eyed each other as though signaling an alert. Black Birch clenched a fist to still himself.
Look, Renwing, we came here in good faith, asking you to help us grind Pataga into the ground so that we might all go back to living in peace.
Peace? Karen's dream died when he did, and it's buried in the mound with him and his servants and his grave goods. Gizzi's found the dream convenient to adopt, since it filled his storehouses with wealth and his name with power. And we've seen Theron's commitment to peace. No, Black Birch, we've never lived in peace. Why do you think half the countryside has palisades? The enemy is us. It's not Pataga. It's our way of life.
What are you talking about?
Trade, mostly. Greed for exotic goods drives the Sunborn. You've seen it. You know what I mean. To get a shred of lace from Yellow Star Mounds, Theron will kill babies for a 5 days walk around Cahokia so that he can steal enough corn to pay for it. Surely this is not new information to you?
What if it's true? Badgertail and I are fighting for the Commonborn, not for the Sunborn.
Are you? Who will benefit most?
Black Birch shot to his feet in anger.
Blessed Father Son! The Commonborn will! They'll be alive, won't they?
Some things are more terrible than death.
For instance?
Dishonor. Sacrificing dozens of strong people so that 2 or 3 may have copper ear spools to wear? Or to keep the war leader inside his plush mountaintop house inside Cahokia's palisade? My people are villagers, Black Birch. We're all Commonborn. Perhaps we can see more clearly as a result. Our eyes aren't clouded by living near the Sunborn, who find the lowest class expendable. I want to see my sister's children grow up and make lives of their own. Our clans here have to rely on each other to survive.
What does that have to do with what
Don't you see? If I send my 40 warriors to fight with you and they're all killed, then I will have murdered my village as well. Those 40 warriors are fathers, farmers, and fishermen, not professional warriors. They are the heart of Bladdernut Village. We can survive without trade, without membership in Theron's chiefdom, but we can't survive without our 40 warriors.
I suspect that Bluebird and Paintbrush felt the same way, young chief. That's why they're dead.
And if we don't join you, Black Birch, what are your orders?
Black Birch fidgeted nervously, refusing to answer. The guards had unfolded their arms and were holding their war clubs at the ready. Their eyes glistened in the mauve shadows, making Black Birch wish he were anywhere but here. Outside, in the open, he might have a chance.
Idiots. If they know that dissent means death, why don't they at least pretend to go along? My orders are to move south, with or without your help.
I see. I take it that means that Bladdernut is dead, no matter whose side we choose. Will you kill my people, Black Birch? in the same way that Pataga murdered yours? What if I promise not to take up arms against Badger Tail? If I give you my word that my people will scatter to the winds until this madness is over, and then return to their homes only with the Sun Chief's approval, what then?
You would let your sister villages be destroyed without lifting a finger to help them? What kind of a chief are you, Renwing? Are your people cowards? Can't you understand that unless we all pull together, we—
Black Birch! Black Birch, quickly! They're coming!
Whirling breathlessly, he faced the door as an elderly, bald-headed warrior named Bucktooth dipped beneath the hanging.
The enemy came up from the south following our trail! It's surely Pataga!
Black Birch ducked out into the moonlight. Flaming arrows laced the sky, landing in the roofs of houses and in the parched brush. Blazes came to life everywhere. When Renwing came out, Black Birch pointed.
See? What did I tell you? Pataga has no cares for your people. If you don't join us, you're condemning all of them to certain...
But Renwing darted away into the darkness, his guards following in a semicircle. Black Birch saw their shapes flit down toward the southern end of the village, to the mouth of a small drainage. There, dozens of other shadows joined them, all vanished into the blackness beyond.
Did Renwing have his village ready to flee all along? Bucktooth, run and find Wasp. Tell her to take 20 and lead a drive along our attacker's right flank. Then find Beehive. I want him to take his men and flank them on the left side. I'll lead what's left of our forces down the middle.
When the old man hesitated, Black Birch shoved him so hard that Bucktooth fell to the ground.
But Black Birch, maybe this is just a diversion to draw us.
I'll do the thinking. Get up, old man. Hurry! You can see where the arrows are coming from. Pataga's forces are still bunched. If we can surround them before they disperse, we'll have them.
Yes, yes, all right. I'm going. I'll tell them.
Bucktooth scrambled to his feet and ran away, limping. Black Birch scowled at the night. Given the narrow swath of land from which the arrows came, it had to be a small party, but he couldn't tell how small.
20 warriors? Or 5, firing in rapid succession? Pataga, you poor boy. You must be desperate to send such a tiny contingent so far north just to harass us. Well, you can count these warriors as dead. We'll pursue them to their doom.
Black Birch leaped over a bush and sprinted downhill to gather his forces.